Hello and welcome to the Great Debates Podcast, friends of the Great Debates.
Beautifully done.
So articulate. That was great, man. Well articulated is what I really mean.
Yeah, both.
All right.
Both.
Sorry.
Who's
the
here?
Great articulate.
I'm taking a roll call. Is Steve Healy here?
Present, ready to debate.
Is Dave King here?
Present, ready to debate.
My name is Dan Medina. I'm also here, and I'm ready to moderate. I have a top.
Thank goodness.
Micro debate. I have a clock set for 3 minutes. Okay? This is a listener top submitted by listener Miriam R.
Thanks, Miriam.
Thanks, Miriam.
The topic is lisps are cute.
Steve Healy, I'm taking the pro. It's so hard to quantify, define what it is that we find as cute, but I think we could all agree that a lot of what we find cute is vulnerability and effort, cute little effort and struggle. That's what we see in a cute little hamster. It's what we see in a cute little kitten. And it's what we see in humans in the lisp. It's people trying to articulate their words, but they're a little bit vulnerable and they're struggling against this slight little hill they have to get over. And that's why lisps are cute. And a cute little kid that comes up to you and asks for some ice cream, that's very cute. And an adult, it's, you know, there enters a tension of like you're worried for them or maybe you're nervous for them. But on the other hand, it's still kind of endearingly vulnerable. And that's why lisps are cute.
Dave King, and I'm going to win. Lisps are a defect. They're a fault. They're a mistake. They're incorrect pronunciation. They're not cute. They often put both the speaker and, I would argue, more commonly the listener in an uncomfortable position. If it's a kid, usually the lisp is cute simply because the kid is cute.
Okay, so you've granted the kid, in kids it's cute.
I don't think that it's always cute in kids. I think that kids
if they're faking
are cute.
It, it's not.
Yeah, but also if it's like too profound a lisp, it can often be sad. It could be the source of a lot of self-doubt. I mean, my friend's mom growing up was a speech therapist, and children's problems with speech can be just as damaging to their psyche and their psychology as many other problems.
Okay, but that's your worry that you're putting on to the kid.
No, not at all. These are the kids' worries. These are actual psychological ramifications of having a lisp or stutter.
Tell kids like that. Don't worry about it. It's cute.
I'm all for telling kids that there's nothing wrong with having a lisp.
I don't think we're lying to them.
The lisp itself, the lack of sibilance, is not cute. It hurts one's ear. It makes one feel as if something wrong has happened because it has. Not everything that children do is cute. Shitting your pants isn't cute, even though kids do it. We say, oh, they made a little duty, but that doesn't mean that it's cute to shit one's pants simply because I think we over-infantilize things, and one of the reasons the lisp is cute, as you
said,
is what?
I fit my pants.
I didn't like that at all.
Tell me that's not cute.
No, I thought that was creepy. I don't really I don't equate a lisp with vulnerability either. I don't think people are this weird take you have that they're like struggling uphill to communicate. Really, it's very rare that you have trouble understanding. Let's be clear about what a lisp is. It's only mispronouncing S's as the th sound or the Z as a th.
Yeah.
That's all a lisp is. It's very rare that that actually leads to a miscommunication or someone not being able to understand.
So it's harmless.
It really just kind of hurts.
Cute
your ears.
Little bunny is cute or...
Well, harmless doesn't mean cute. Hurting your ears doesn't mean cute.
Deans, what do you think?
I don't think that Healy won so much as Dave lost. And here's...
No.
I know this is going to sound crazy to you, but when you did the, like... When you went down the little duty road... I thought, oh, that sounds cute. A little ditty is cute.
You kind of blew it by making it sound cute.
Oh, yeah, you're confusing, but see, I'm sorry.
And then you equated Dan that with...
With due respect, you made a mistake here, which is that you're equating the sound of little bit of duty. Oh, you made a little duty, and how cute that is to talk to a child with a grown-up having... feces in their pants. That was the point I'm trying to make. Just because kids shit their pants doesn't mean that it's cute to shit one's pants.
I'm going to make a dramatic left turn away from shitting our pants to some great news. We have a live event, live Great Debates.
Oh! Okay. Live great debates. We used to do this.
On the island of Manhattan, New York City.
Whoa!
The Slipper Room.
The
very
what?
Cool venue, the Slipper Room.
No, you said the Slipper Room.
You what? Had a little bit of a lisp there.
What did I Slipper
be,
Room.
You wanted to be cute.
The Slipper Room. What did I do?
Slipper Room.
Slipper Room.
No, I heard rum.
Slipper Room. That's not really a
Slipper
lisp.
Room is the name of the place.
Yeah.
Sound Slipper normal? Room.
Guys, here's the deal. We're going to be live in New York City on May 22nd.
Sunday, May 22nd, at the Slipper Room.
Sunday.
We have some great surprise guests planned.
It's going to be so
exciting. We put on a good
exciting.
Show. You're going to get your money's worth.
If you haven't seen The Great Debates live because you've lived in New York all this time, guess what? Now's your chance. It's a really fun evening.
Healy. King Medina.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Those people, plus special guests.
I tell you what, I've got two tickets I'm going to give away.
Really?
Yeah. If you email greatdebates69@gmail.com and you say what your favorite episode is, but this is only open to people who live more than 100 miles from New York.
What?
So if you got to be like, I'm going to come in, I'm going to drive, transport, take the train 100 miles to New York to see the show, I'm going to give you a free ticket.
If you live more than 100 miles from New York.
First two people who live more than 100 miles, first person who lives more than 100 miles from New York who says they want to come to the show, who tells me their favorite Great Debates episode, I'll give them two tickets.
Cool. Okay, I'm into that.
Yeah.
So like a Bostonian.
Does this person have to jump through?
It's going to take them a long time to write an email saying Irish versus Millennials, my favorite.
At least 2 hours.
I live in Philadelphia. I'm coming.
Do what you want with yours, man. Let's see how
you're
the
hoarding
tickets
yours.
Sell. Do people have to buy tickets?
Yeah, you can go to the Slipper Room website. It'll be on our Great Debates website as well. We'll have a link on there, and we'll tweet it out, and we'll make it easy for you to find the place where you buy tickets. But you got to buy them in advance. They might be sold out by now, for all I know.
Wow. They're definitely selling. I'm sure that they're selling.
They're moving.
Now that we've announced them.
It's Host Chat.
I love Host Chat.
Medina?
What is it?
You are on the hook today, bud.
What'd I do?
A listener, it's a great thing. A listener wrote in and he'd done some Googling about you and brought me a piece of trivia about you that I did not know.
Oh my goodness.
It turns out that you, Dan Medina, won the William Scott Ferguson Prize.
Oh,
for best sophomore history thesis.
Yes.
When you were at Harvard College.
I didn't know that.
I won a prize for writing an essay about women's suffrage.
The title of the essay was The Path of Least Resistance, Idealism versus Practicality in the Women's Suffrage Movement, 1910 to 1920.
Yeah, I won a little prize.
Wow, that's amazing.
I got $500.
Did you really?
Yeah, they wrote me a little check to buy some books.
Oh, that's amazing.
You know who else won the prize?
You?
Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts.
Wow.
Back in his day.
I should write him a letter. I should write him a letter.
Yeah, Ferguson, you give him the Ferguson handshake.
Maybe I should go out for Supreme Court.
Yeah, I think you're on the path. So tell us a little bit about the practicality versus idealism in the women's suffrage movement.
I couldn't remember a word of the paper. Ooh. I will say this. My mother looked at the paper for me. I said, Mom, can you give this an edit? Because my mom is a historian also.
Yeah.
And she gave me some great notes, and I incorporated those notes, and I honestly credit her with the
interesting
what pushed me over for the win.
But you didn't share the money with her.
No, not at all. Well, but she didn't have to pay for those books, so.
I see. It was
in a way, she won.
Wow.
As well as me.
Did you let every female student you knew know that you were writing an essay about what the women's suffrage movement?
That was a grave, critical error, a tactical error.
Not doing that.
Like a prize-winning essay about women's rights.
Speaking of moms,
yeah,
my mom today was hanging out with her friend Judy Weinberg. She wanted to get Judy Weinberg's famous recipe for coconut macaroons. Ooh. And Judy Weinberg took out a little note card in her kitchen and handed it over to my mom. And what did it say across the top? Rosie King's coconut macaroons.
What?
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah. You know, that's so funny.
Dave and I grew up in the same town. Dave's mom has a famous recipe, I guess,
this
that's going around
for
from mom to mom.
Macaroons. I was biting my tongue, but as soon as you said macaroons, I said, well, whatever recipe she's about to get, they're not going to be as good as my mom's.
It sounds like they're going to be exactly like your mom's. Let's hope.
Yeah, my mom makes bomb macaroons.
That's
not
great.
Macarons.
Yeah.
Macaroons.
What is the difference there?
Oh, a macaron is like the little French sandwich thing.
It looks like a McDonald's cheeseburger.
It looks like a tiny McDonald's cheeseburger. You get them at like Bottega Louis and what's that place called? You know, it's like a, oh, I can't remember, but whatever. They're all over Beverly Hills. You get them in 30 colors.
Republique.
Yeah. A macaroon is a larger, I believe almond and coconut situation. That's more like a cookie.
Yeah.
And man, my mom just knocks them out of the park. Come Passover, Thanksgiving, everyone in the family is asking for them. The King family, the Brown family, that's her side. This is amazing. How did Judy Weinberg get her hand on Rosie King's? They must be friends.
Yeah.
Something.
Would your mom be game for letting that be in the Great Debates News, that recipe?
I'd have to ask her. She guards some recipes a little more closely than others.
Wise.
She's also a very generous woman, and she loves food. She loves sharing food. So I would imagine that she'd be up for it. I mean, if you want, we could call her right now. You want me to get her on the phone?
No.
We could try it.
The answer is clearly yes. Okay, let's get her on the call.
Let's see what happens.
I'm nervous.
The phone's ringing.
She might answer and call me something embarrassing.
Let's hope.
Booby. Hi, Bubby.
Hi, Bubby.
Hello?
Mommy.
Hi.
So somehow the topic of your delicious coconut macaroon recipe came up during the Great Debates podcast.
Hello, Mrs. King.
Hi, Mrs. King. Hi. It came up because this is Steve talking. My mom got a recipe from Judy Weinberg for coconut macaroons that it turns
out
was your recipe. That's your
recipe.
Yes.
I gave it to Judy Weinberg.
It said Rosie King's recipe across the top, but we were wondering if we could publish that recipe in our newsletter, GD News.
Sure.
Yes. That's not one that you're super protective of, Mom. This isn't like the Colonel's recipe.
No. I can't do that.
How do you
share with the world?
They're
not coconut. They're almond macaroons.
That's
almond
what I know.
Macaroons. Almond macaroons.
Yeah, they're not coconut.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. How do you know Judy Weinberg?
Well, she was in Needham, and they belonged to Temple Elia. We met years ago. I think we moved around.
There you go.
It used to be like a new club. But I brought some of these macaroons to something that she was at.
Uh-oh.
We lost her.
I'm losing you, Mom.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
Hold on, I'll try to move. I'll move around. But Judy Weinberg was there, and she called me after this event and asked for the recipe.
There you go. If you had to...
Go ahead.
If you had to describe the macaroons in three words...
The ingredients you want?
No, never mind. It doesn't matter. It's okay. Forget it.
Almondy, sugar, sweet, and some people have claimed that they must crack in them because they like can't stop eating them.
There you
go. Crack in them.
That's the secret ingredient.
Crack.
So, I'm not saying they do or they don't.
Right.
All right.
I can't wait to make these macaroons.
This is going
to
be great.
All right. Thank you, Mom. I'll let you off the hook.
Up a little bit.
Okay. I'm going to let you go. I love you.
Thank you, Mrs. King.
We love
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Oops.
Generous woman. So look for that. Another reason to subscribe to the GD News.
Guys, if you subscribe to the GD News, you're going to get Rosie King's almond macaroon recipe that previously has only been traded in an analog, like on
hand
a piece
to
of
hand,
note
mother
card.
To mother.
Hand to hand.
No, yeah, this is...
In Needham, Massachusetts.
We're going to bring it to the world.
We're going to bring it to the world.
Needham cooking, coming to the world. Hey, we also got to give a shout out to the Great Debates merch store.
The store is open.
It's live. Dave, talk to us. What are the specials?
Oh, I mean...
Mugs. Pillows.
Hats.
The mugs
not
look
hats.
So great.
I'm sorry, there are no hats. Oh. Mugs, shirts, hoodies, colors, all kinds. You go to greatdebate69.com.
Do you think there are too many options? Is it overwhelming?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Yeah.
Probably.
Hey, send us pictures of yourself wearing your Great Debate stuff.
Put some stuff on. Go to a cool spot that you like and put your hands in the air and take a picture and put it on Instagram.
And
or
if you can, if there's more than one of you, then of course take a picture of yourself doing the Great Debate's handshake, where of course one of you points 45 degrees up and the other points 45 degrees down with one finger, just like the logo. And that's how you know
you got a debater.
Also do the Great Debate's call.
That's right. You could do the Great Debate's call.
Will you do that for us again?
Sure.
You can try to do it again.
Sorry. It goes like this.
That's it. If you hear that call, a fellow debater's in distress, run to him.
Can I tell you a serious little side note about the Great Debate's call?
Because
I feel like credit is due here.
Yeah.
I had a neighbor growing up who, he is a wonderful man, the best neighbor you could ask for. Cleaned your gutters, was active in the community, very funny, loved the kids in the neighborhood. And he had this sort of half-joking thing. He was sort of like a grown-up Boy Scout type guy.
Love this guy.
And he had this thing. That is his call.
I've
embellished it a little bit.
Yeah.
But the sort of reason I'm telling you this is that his name was Dick Foot, which is one of the all-time amazing names.
Foot.
But he's also the best dude.
Richard Foot.
Yeah, Richard Foot.
Foot with an E, like Shelby Foot?
No.
Foot.
No. Dick is in Dick. Foot is in Foot. And he like ran the YMCA in Cambridge. He was very big in the Y organization.
Cool.
Best guy.
Dick Foot's call.
Yeah. And so our call is an homage, or really a ripoff.
No relation to Bigfoot.
No relation to Bigfoot, nor was he related to my Little League coach, Gordy Dick. true name.
What an American boyhood you had.
True name story.
Should we have a main, or as some have suggested, calling it a Great Debate?
Let's have a Great Debate.
Yeah, a lot of
listeners trying that out.
Call the Great Debate the Great Debate. Great idea.
If you guys like that it's called the Great Debate, let us know. I have a Great Debate topic, and I'm going to have... who should take the pro? Healy can take the pro.
Okay. You think that's more life-affirming?
I don't know if I do, actually.
Let's find out.
Yeah, we'll try it.
I'll take the pro.
This topic submitted by listener Owen E. Has sent us this topic. Thanks, Owen E.
Owen, we're going to get you some merch from the store as a thank you.
Topic up for debate: George W. Bush and Barack Obama share a secret.
I'm Steve Healy, and I've been assigned the pro, and I think that absolutely George W. Bush and Barack Obama share a secret. Look, these guys have both been the president of the United States, so let's just break it down into categories. First of all, I think there are secrets about the White House itself. The layout, how it's handled, how you get stuff done in the physical aspects of the building. There's probably a secret little cabinet somewhere. There's probably a passcode that Bush passed along to his successor, Obama, on inauguration day, something like that. Next category, military. There's probably some secrets that every president knows about the military that is shared by the two of these guys. Now, I don't know if the topic, I'll leave this up to Medina, whether they could share it with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, they could share it with the head of NASA, the commander of whatever, but I think they surely share, the two of them, a secret that's known to a very small number of people about the workings of the military. Now, there's probably also personal secrets. These guys are both heads of the White House. They probably have a secret about some of the personnel in the White House, some of the Supreme Court justices, some of the other people that interact with presidents that preserve some of our democratic continuity. There's surely some secret passed from president to president, or known only to those kinds of people who end up as president, about some high-level officials, a secret about the Prime Minister of England. Everybody knows the Queen of England farts all the time. Only Bush and Barack know this. I don't know. a bureaucratic secret, something about the Central Intelligence Agency, the operations of the Department of Interior, NASA, etc. I think there's such a wide range of secrets that they probably share 50 to 100 secrets. That's my opening statement.
You know, actually, I wouldn't mind turning to our moderator, Medina, for a little clarification, because I think it's worth stipulating.
Mm-hmm.
Is by secret, do we mean a secret that only the two of them know? Is this a secret that are we limiting this to?
To me, yeah. That sounds a little more true to the wording of the topic.
I think that is fair.
So
I'll
this
grant
is
that.
A secret.
Is that okay with you? You just made that beautiful opening
statement.
That's
okay. All I ask for is another 30 seconds.
Great. I think that's fair. Please
that's
continue.
Okay.
I bet that on Barack's inauguration day, almost certainly George W. Bush said the following sentence. Hey, I'll tell you a little secret. X.
Mm.
Or he left a written letter for Obama, his successor, saying so-and-so. You know, what do we know about George W. Bush? He is a guy who is known for his charm, and he definitely wanted to reach out to his successor in some personal way, president to president. He's a guy who respects the presidency. His father was president. Whatever you think about him personally, I have no doubt that he shared a secret with his successor on or about Inauguration Day.
Well, I'll pick up where you left off. I don't think that George W. Bush is actually, in the world of presidents, more likely than your average president to respect the office or have a great sense of history or lineage or secret sharing or fraternity among the presidents simply because his father was president. In fact, I don't think for most of his life George W. Bush aspired to be president. He doesn't strike me as the person who has a great sense of history and gravity, but that's a little bit beside the point. I do think, unfortunately, I'm glad we clarified, the key thing here is we're talking about a secret between two people. So even in your version where George W. Bush took Barack Obama aside on his inauguration day and said, let me tell you a little secret, well, what are the chances that that's a secret that only George W. Bush knew? Secrets are the kinds of things that we usually share with our wives, or if you're the president, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, if it's a military secret, is there really... Basically, what you're telling me is that there was something that only George W. Bush knew, only him, and that he then told only Barack Obama that. And I find that pretty hard to believe, not only because I don't think that there's that much information that fits that criteria, but also because I'm hard-pressed to think of a time besides the inauguration when the two of them were seen together. I don't think they have strong correspondence. If you told me that George W. Bush and Bill Clinton had shared secrets, I might be more apt to believe you. They've certainly spent a fair amount of time together. Barack Obama is a busy man. I think that any secret, I believe that they share highly classified information. But for example, the Queen farts. Well, everyone that the Queen's butler knows that the Queen farts. The Queen's, husbands certainly know that the Queen farts in a world where the Queen farts, as you've posited. And for that reason, I don't think that they share a secret. That's the end of my closing statement.
Okay, I'm going to jump in on a couple lines of attack. First of all, we know that George W. Bush was in a secret society, Skull and Bones, and in his campaign biography, he goes out of his way to say, it's so secret, I can't talk about it. So he is a guy who respects some kinds of secrecy and secret stuff. He's into it. The guy was in a secret society.
Okay.
But now,
those
Dave also
shared with hundreds of
other people.
True. Yeah.
Dave also brought up the idea that he probably shared a lot of the stuff with his wife. Yeah, we're in free skate,
but I'm
asking you to give me a little time here to take some lines of attack.
I like it.
I think that it's doubtful that Laura Bush is that interested in a lot of these presidential secrets. I just don't think that she cares about a lot of this stuff. So I think there's stuff that he didn't necessarily keep from her, but that is a secret to her. Now,
Dick Cheney probably cares.
Okay,
the chief of staff probably cares.
I'm so glad that you brought up Dick Cheney, because let me walk you through a couple possibilities of a secret that George W. shared with Obama.
Walk me.
You better start walking.
The onus is on you, man.
I'll tell you a little secret. One day, I'm as Bush, tell you a secret. One day, Cheney came into my office and said, blah, blah, blah. He's telling this to Barack. Tell you a little secret. My dad said this to me the day I was inaugurated. Again, a secret that's basically only shared between the two of them.
No, it's shared with
Cheney
that one. And the dad.
Tell you a little secret. When I appointed John Roberts, I felt blah, 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 but I did blah, blah, blah. Again, a secret of his mind that he's sharing with Barack, the only guy who's going to understand his office. Tell you a little secret. My inauguration day, I cried. Tell you a little secret. The Queen shat the bed in the Lincoln bedroom. Again, a secret that he covered
That's
it
a good
up.
One.
And he tells the White House mess guys, hey, you know, somebody shit the bed in there. I don't think it was the queen. Again,
but in the case where the queen shat the bed, obviously people other than the president knew. It's not a secret that just Bush and Obama shared.
You can definitely imagine a scenario where the queen sort of buzzed, George W. Bush comes in. You must forgive me, I've shat the bed.
You think she calls the president directly when she shits the bed at 4? Why is, by the way, what is this fascination with what's coming out of the queen's anus?
Well, we don't
have to. All I'm talking about is the queen farting and shitting the bed.
Well, I'm just talking about what possible secrets. I think it's very possible.
I know, and you've so far the only specific secrets you've mentioned, for the most part, are related to the queen's butt.
That's not true, Dave. Come on, I've given you a ton of possible secrets.
That he cried on the inauguration.
The most likely possible secret is a George W. Bush thought or had an experience privately that he then shared with Barack, which I think is highly likely.
I just think that I agree with you that that's likely. I don't know that it's highly
likely.
Also,
by the way, let's come the other way. Obama, maybe he said to George W., hey, nobody knows this, but I voted for you. Or...
do you believe that that happened?
I think it's unlikely, but he's a nobody. Hey, I think it's possible that Obama said, hey, nobody knows this, but when you beat John Kerry, I was a little bit relieved. I think that's a kind of secret he may have shared with George W.
I would say that he shared that with Michelle because they're Obama and Michelle. I mean, you can reject.
I think there's no way he told. There's no way he told Michelle that.
Well, he told
Michelle.
Friend.
Oh, Michelle, I'm so
he's
sad.
He's
going to
tell George Bush. He's going to tell people he's actually friends with. Also, George Bush and this friendship that you're making up between the two of them doesn't exist. Also, the kinds of secrets that you're saying that George. Can I tell you a secret? I cried on election day. First of all, people probably saw him cry. He's rarely
he
alone.
He closed the door of the Oval Office.
Told someone.
Obama gets into the Oval Office, his first day of office, he finds a letter there from George W. I'm sure this is a tradition of presidents. We've heard of cases of this. The letter says, "Dear Barack, George here, you know, I'll tell you a secret. When I first got into the office, I was overwhelmed by the staggering nature of it, and I started weeping." That's just all I'm doing is coming up with I think I've created a constellation of likely possibilities, and you just can't eliminate all of them. There's too many butterflies here.
But the reality is that those letters are more often filled with just like platitudes of like, "Hey, good luck, buddy." Like,
I'm sure there's plenty of that.
Here's my possibility is that George W. Bush had a note waiting for Obama, and it said, "Hey, pal, good luck out there."
I'm sure that's very possible.
And it had like a gold star on it.
But one thing we do know about George Bush is that he finds ways to connect to people. He's incredibly charming.
Sammy Sosa rookie card,
and he's a guy who would know that a great way to connect to somebody is through a shared secret.
No, he's
Barack
not,
the same way.
No.
Barack
he's
the same
not
way.
The kind
These
of
are
guy
guys
who
connects
with someone through secrets. He's the kind of guy who connects with someone with a
handshake
and a
smile. Dude,
he's
a guy who's in a famous secret
smile.
Society. He loves secrets. His dad was the head of the CIA. This is a family of secrets.
Those secrets are very different than the kind of secrets like, "Hey, I cried during inauguration." You're talking about the secret.
I'm raising so many possibilities. You can't even shoot them all down. There's the personal. There's the political.
If I had to vote on
the presidential, the military, the physical of the Oval Office. There's a secret. I left $20 under the Resolute desk.
Well, he didn't do that.
Who knows?
And, or if it's any kind of secret about the White House or the physical space, that's something that dozens of people who work in the White House will know.
I think there's
really
a level that's just at the presidential
just
level.
Just for Barack Obama?
There's a whole living quarters of the White House that I think there's all kinds of secrets about.
Here's your other
about.
Problem, Healy, is that you have to now assume that not only did George W. Bush only tell Barack Obama, but that Barack Obama hasn't told a soul. And don't you think he's likely to tell people? You want to, for the examples you've given, "Hey, Michelle, you know what's weird? George Bush told me he cried the day he inaugurated."
Yeah, I think that's a possible way of eliminating some secrets, but I think
in a world where a secret is shared between Bush and Obama, there's an excellent chance that Obama then shares
it with someone
else.
There's a level of secrecy where it's like, you know, I was presented with this memo and I shredded it, but here was my thought when I got it. And
okay,
it's
well,
not something
say,
that Michelle would be interested in or even know about.
You
that
know what? I
would shared
say to
president
that, Healy,
to president.
Presidential secret? I think that that's a secret that George probably shared with his daddy, who was a president and he turned to often for advice. And the two of them
okay,
are
but his dad
more
was out of office in 92. His dad was out of office in 92. Yeah. There's been a whole world of presidential intelligence and stuff going on since then that may not even
why
interest
is,
the
does
dad.
That matter?
The dad is up there in Kennebunkport chilling out.
Well, then he calls
Obama
his brother. He told his brother.
Obama and W.
Told,
there's way less likely that he told Jeb. There's some respect from president to president that is a secret level of respect.
Yeah, that's why he calls his dad
I think
and said, "Hey, I had to shred this document did you ever deal with something like this? And Bush said,
I definitely think W and HW share secrets too. Yeah, I mean, that doesn't mean that he and Barack don't share one.
No, but it means that the
you're trying to expand the world of the secret to get it beyond the two of them. But I think there's still such a vast range of possible secrets between the two of them that it's highly likely George W. Bush and Barack Obama share a secret. That's my closing statement.
That's your closing statement.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, I'll just remind the listener that the secret not only needs to be one. Basically, you're saying there's a piece of information that only George W. Bush knew, and he told that piece
or
of
that only Barack. Or that only
please,
Barack.
Please respect closing statements.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. You're right.
I'm allowed to interject in closing statements if you misrepresent my arguments.
Okay, so
everyone
either George W. Bush, one of them,
yes,
knew something that only one of them knew.
Yeah,
and then okay. Now you have to stop talking. They said that piece of information only to the other person. And they did this during the maybe 90 minutes that they've been in the same room together. Then the other person told zero other people. And your examples are things like, hey, the Oval Office door is a little hard to open. Or a state secret. Or something personal. And to that, I say, these are all things that other people would be privy to, whether it's family, whether it's high-ranking government officials, or whether, as in the wonderful case of the farting queen, it's the butler of Her Majesty. That's the end of my closing statement. Medina, what did you think?
We need you more than ever, bud.
I mean, what is a secret? Is that what, cause like, is it just only these two people know? Or is it like, well, I did this 10 years ago with some people and this happened and I haven't told anybody about it and I'm telling you, but I don't know. I mean, Dave, your point is basically like, these guys aren't buds. And
one
Healy,
of my great points.
Your point is like these guys were in the same office that has a lot of like affinities and like
yes,
wisdom
well
traded
put.
And blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's hard to conclude that other than that, there's something that they've talked about that they haven't talked about.
But
with
now, hold
else.
On, Medina. You're not supposed Just to be determining for, whether or not they have a secret.
That
shared.
Is true.
You're
That's
supposed
true.
To be determining who won the debate.
Yeah, I know, and I'm...
For
and
the
I'm,
gamblers, we're going to need an answer.
I'm thinking about your
the,
argument.
By the way, the line in Vegas
yeah,
had you minus a half, which I don't know what that means.
Minus, but you minus
were
the, a half.
You were the favorite. You were just...
So I have to have won by more than a point,
That's
right?
correct.
Okay.
Right. Right, which maybe you, I mean, maybe you won by a half.
I'll say it was probably a push in Vegas.
It might be a push.
So you won, but it was a
Vegas push.
Yeah.
Because
okay,
you're
well,
you know, a constellation, too many butterflies. That's really what it might boil down
the
to.
The over-under for the debate was 11.
By the way, I got a real wake-up call at a party recently where there were a lot of debates fans. I talked to two of them who both say they lean King.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah, that's right.
Okay, I think
people
that
out there
I
get it.
Win 80 to 90% of the
delusional.
Debates. These people were both like, I don't know, Dave might win some of those.
Yes.
But they did admit they lean King.
Yeah, the wording that they
lean
told
king,
me was not nearly as kind as they lean king, I'll tell you that.
Lean king means like they like
they're,
the king.
They're king types. Their
type?
Mind is kingish.
King mind.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't read it that way. I thought what I heard was
they appreciate
king
your
wins
skills.
More often. I don't necessarily agree with him, but he's better at this. He's winning.
I don't think you heard that.
Well,
I can tell when you're lying.
Inferred. No, they didn't say that, but that's what.
Hey, listeners, weigh in.
Don't you think during the financial crisis of 2008 into 2009?
That's right. They had so many meetings. Oh my
and
gosh!
This is, no one gets the. This is point for Medina.
Well, that's a great point.
Like
yeah.
Bush had to call Obama and said, "Like, bro, you're.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Yes,
yeah,
that's
yes,
such a good
but
point.
There's
yeah.
nothing that Bush knew that someone else didn't. George Bush wasn't calling, going like, "Hey." Not even Timothy Geithner knows this.
Okay,
but tomorrow AIG, he didn't fucking know what was
let's
going
say
on. He's
there's
George
a secret,
W. Bush. He's
hold
a dumb
on,
man.
Oh,
all right, well, what about
let's say there's a secret between five people.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of those level secrets.
And
yeah.
those are shared secrets that are also shared between Obama and Bush
okay,
and
well,
Paulson and
I'm liking
the
definition kind of and the John Roberts that we brought up earlier. I'm liking that and putting Medina really to the test. So let me offer a case and you tell me if this counts as a secret between Barack and W. Okay. Angela Merkel in the middle of financial crisis calls W, says we're completely fucked. You have to do X. Bush either does it or doesn't. And then he calls Barack and he says, listen, nobody knows about this, but I talked to Angela and we have got to do X. Is that a secret?
That counts.
Between Barack and W.
I would count that, sure.
But there's probably a translator, though, who was in on the call.
Yeah, like, and also, I just can't imagine that Bush didn't do that without consulting, you know, whoever his people, his financial people were. I mean, it's certainly not Dick Cheney. I think we know enough about that administration to know that it wasn't like George Bush was calling the shots. Mm-hmm. Also, he whatever it was that he had to do, it wasn't like he could just push a button or go to a website and make it happen. He had to instruct people.
For some reason, we debated this all on the W-2 Barack direction.
Well,
it was
an interesting point, but what is Barack going to tell? You think that would just be a way for him to like...
Late at night, calls George 6 months in office. Boy, nobody knows this, but I'm X. I'm Z.
Oh, great example.
Yeah. I get nervous every time I call the...
I know what happened.
It's more like, can you talk to this guy and fix this problem for me in Texas?
Yes,
because it's like,
sure.
Here's what I think happened in Healy's mind just now. Is that his example was going to be Barack calling up George W. Bush and saying, nobody knows this, but the Queen called me and she had terrible diarrhea. But he couldn't say that out loud because it would have been his third example of something weird coming
out the
Queen's
butt. You
knew
more about
the
Queen than I did.
So he said
friends.
X and Z.
But you were the one who kept hitting. I brought it up, yes, but you brought
twice,
it up two or three
twice.
Times. Since.
You
twice.
Said the Queen
Don't
farted,
try to back
and
out
then
of
the
this.
Queen shat the bed in the Lincoln bedroom. That's weird. Let me ask you this. Have you ever referred to the Queen's digestion more than once? I mean, in the span of 5 minutes, don't you think that's an odd thing to happen?
Well, we're coming up with hypothetical presidential secrets, and I'm trying to come up with something. After having introduced the military state level,
right. And
there's
two
also
of
just
the
a
seven
personal
you came up
diplomatic
with related
level.
To the Queen's butthole.
It's vivid. It is very vivid.
It's part of my A fist strategy is imagery. That's
Wait,
the I
that?
And a fist. That's an acrostic of my style of debate. A fist.
Did you make this up?
The I is imagery.
Did you make this up? A fist?
Yeah.
You've never shared this with
what's
us.
Why
fist?
Would I tell you my strategies?
Well, I don't know, but you're just telling us now
well,
that the I is for
the
imagery.
I is imagery.
20% of your
you
strategies
just gave it away.
Yeah, I'll give you some more because that doesn't matter.
What's A?
A is just, anger, Dave.
You just went from why would I tell you this to here's 40%
well,
of it.
I was realizing, like, who cares?
Okay, is there a piece of paper somewhere in the contents of your documents that has A underline F underline I underline S underline T and then explains what they all are.
Yes.
You wrote it out at one point. Is it in a notebook?
I'll tell you what, if Rosie
leaf?
Gives us the recipe for the almond macaroons, I'll put that also.
You'll publish.
Yeah, that's a fair trade.
Okay, great.
I think there's a C missing in your thing. You know why? Because you're a fascist.
A fascist. It's an anagram of fascist.
I don't know. Just trying some letter moving around things.
I don't think that was so great.
No, it wasn't.
Well, guys, I'm going to wrap this episode up because I think we've belabored the point. But that was super fun.
That was a good one.
So here are some things you need to do out there. You need to subscribe to the Great Debates newsletter because this week, Rosie King's almond macaroon recipe is going to be there, as well as Healy explaining the A-fist debate strategy. Also, you're going to find a link there in the Great Debates news where you can buy tickets to our live event in New York City at the Slipper Room on May 22nd. May 22nd, Sunday, May 22nd. We're going to have a great time. We have special guests lined up. It's going to be really funny and great. And then finally, reach out to us, send us your topics, send us your feedback, send us your rambling thoughts. And, you know, a specific request to Owen E., help us understand the definition of a secret.
Yeah, actually, that would be great.
Thanks, as always, to all our listeners for submitting great tops, and we'll see you next week on The Great Debates. Great Debates is produced by Mark Carosello. Our audio engineer is Mackenzie Kellerman. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King. And the podcast is moderated by Dan Medina.